Michael Parker and D-Program on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. It is Michael Parker. Today is Thursday here in North America. I am coming to you from Los Angeles, California, and it is a better day than it was yesterday. I got some sleep. I'm a little bit mentally better. So let's kick this thing off. We're going to be joined in just a moment by Salvatore Style. We're going to talk about the shipping situation that we're encountering. But first of all, I got to cover one quick story. There's outrage in Houston, Texas today as the National Rifle Association is preparing to host its annual meeting at the George R. Brown Convention Center in Houston. This is an annual thing. They do it every year, and it's always a draw for activists and counter-protesters. But this year, in light of the Uvalde shooting, it's even more so. So they're going to have speakers. Donald Trump's going to be there, Texas Governor Greg Abbott, Ted Cruz. Many high-profile Republican leaders are scheduled to address the convention. And I didn't know that it was attended by as many people as are attended. And it's listed that typically there's around over 50,000 people that show up for this thing. So the people of Houston are upset about it. And right now, groups like Moms Demand Action, Indivisible Houston, Youth for Beto. Beto is running for governor opposite Greg Abbott. And the Houston chapter of Black Lives Matter are all organizing activities at the convention center and nearby to protest the NRA. And of course, the NRA is the National Rifle Association. This is an extremely powerful lobby and is often criticized. And so now the fact they're going to have this meeting right after the Uvalde shooting has really upset people. So one person, Ashton P. Woods, who's an activist and a founder of Black Lives Matter Houston, says they are not welcome in his hometown. These people are coming into our community. The city of Houston needs to kick them out. We have to be just as tough about these things as they are. And interestingly enough, this is not the first time that one of these NRA meetings has happened close to one of these tragedies. A similar situation happened back in 1999, and that was right after Columbine, which I think, at least in my mind right off the bat, was the first major school shooting. At that point, there were 8,000 protesters that greeted the NRA, and that was the one where Charlton Heston famously, you know, he was the president of the NRA, famously delivered his defiant message, you know, pry it out of my cold dead hands. So as far as I know, the current meeting is still scheduled to happen, and there are going to be plenty of people out there protesting it. And the police of Houston say that they are prepared for it. They're not giving any specific indications how they're going to deal with it, but they are planning for it. Meanwhile, former President Obama is being criticized for his tone-deaf tweet that said, quote, now this happened yesterday, quote, as we grieve the children of Uvalde today, we should take time to recognize that 2 years have passed since the murder of George Floyd under the knee of a police officer. His killing stays with us all to this day, especially those who loved him, unquote. Yeah, you can't make this up. So people are pretty much outraged that he said this, linking the two events together. Yeah, there's no words at this point. You are listening to TNT. We'll be right back.
Less of the culture you don't want.
I've had enough of this cancel culture.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right. In this first segment today, we're joined by Salvatore Style. He is the founder and president of Alba Wheels Up International. It is a freight forwarder and customs broker. Sal's knowledge of national and international shipping, not to mention the economy, has made him a resource for many of the nation's leading publications, both industry and mainstream. He has been sourced in outlets that have included the Wall Street Journal, the New York Post, and Newsday, among others. Sal appears regularly on Fox Family of Networks as an industry expert. He's also made appearances on Bloomberg and Newsmax. Greetings, Alex. Sal, how are you?
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Good. Alex is my producer, and I'm still waking up. But thank you for joining me, brother.
Sounds good. So, let's
hey, are you on the floor? Are you on the floor? Where are you at?
Actually, I have a background. I wish I was on the floor, but that's of one of the Coliseums in New York that Alba was fortunate enough to be a sponsor of on the Big Dash scoreboard. So,
right on. I figured that out after looking at it a little bit. Like I say, I've got my first cup of tea, so I'm just kind of waking up. But I appreciate you joining us. I've been watching a lot of your segments on Maria and on Fox, and we've got quite a while to talk about what we're going to talk about. But first of all, for context for our audience, explain what your company does and what you do with the company in the industry.
Okay. So our company is basically an international freight forwarder and U.S. customs broker. So a lot of times the services are used simultaneously for our clients or importers, but sometimes separately. So what an international freight forwarder does is that if you are bringing goods from overseas, for the sake of discussion, into the United States, we're going to take care of the documents arranged for the transportation and the bookings on the airlines, on the steamship lines, and then get the goods to the United States. Once they arrive at the United States, then we're going to do the customs clearance and take care of all the formalities, make sure that the product is properly classified according to what duty is due. Mind you, there are 25,000 different duty codes in the U.S. Customs Harmonized Tariff. So you have to be very familiar with all different verticals, all different product lines, as well as U.S. Customs and the other government agencies such as FDA, EPA, in the case of those are pharmaceuticals or fruit. So really what we are is kind of like a very sophisticated travel agent for cargo. Yet when the goods get here, we're kind of like a CPA filing a tax return if you were an individual, but we're doing it for cargo. So that's really the simplest way to explain what we do.
No, I understand. And so you're doing that this for a lot of different companies and of various sizes. And I've been trying to get up to speed yesterday on your business. So the supply chain issue, I mean, this is something that we've been looking at for at least a year. Those of us who are not in the business, we finally become aware of how interconnected and fragile the system can be. You were on Mornings with Maria recently, and she was showing at the time, I guess it was like a satellite image. Basically, it was showing 506 ships off of the port of Shanghai. Is it still that bad or has it gotten any better?
It's still bad. A lot of those ships, obviously, of the 500 were taken into consideration every single type of vessel, whether it be a tanker, a container ship, a pleasure cruise vessel. So it was exacerbated, but there's still hundreds of vessels that are cargo related at the port. And you have to mind you, that's also in and out. So basically what's happening, goods are flowing, but not at the capacity levels they should be. And that's because of the China lockdowns. And by the way, I phrased it China now, the port of black swans. Okay. And for those of you that aren't familiar with what a black swan is in reference to business and so forth, it's something that's an anomaly, that's unforeseen event that could happen. Okay. So with these lockdowns and port issues, you never know when something's going to happen in China. So I call it a black swan port, because today something could be fine and next week it could be a disaster on your hands. So that basically is my perspective on China.
Well, I'm glad you cleared up what those symbols represent, in because it did. I mean, the statistic that was shown was 506 ships. And then if you saw it for the people, if they saw this segment that you were in, I mean, it looked bad. It looked like this whole swarm of boats that are offshore. So I listened to that. I listened to a couple more of your segments and then I go poking around. And Alex, I if you could play this clip for Sal, because Sal, the reason I bring this up is then we have this gentleman here in LA who runs the port here in LA. And he makes this statement that sounds, you know, like everything's just peachy. So I'm going to have Alex play this for you, and then I'd like your response.
What can you tell us today about the port and about the supply chain issues around cargo?
Good morning, Maria. We're coming off our best first quarter ever, and for the month of April, second best in our history. In fact, when we release those numbers here this morning, West Coast time, the April figures will show a 17% increase compared to the last five-year average, and imports are up 18% over that time. During the past 2 months with the COVID-19 lockdowns in Shanghai, we have not seen the precipitous drop in cargo that some have called for. Rather, we've been averaging about 40 vessels per week departing, and the throughput at the Port of Los Angeles rivals our all-time highs.
Sounds like everything's going fine.
Yeah. So based on, I could be wrong, but hopefully my ear is correct, but I think that was Gene Soroka.
Correct.
The executive director of the Port of LA, which,
yes.
I have a lot of admiration for with the job he's doing. But to put things in context, the peak things have been a lot better than 6 months ago. Okay.
Yes.
With the port, but there are a couple of things that have to be put into context. To my knowledge, first of all, the vessels are not coming in 100% full, okay, capacity wise. So that plays a role. A vessel is not a vessel. If it has 18,000 containers and it's only bringing in 14, that makes a difference. The other issue is with the ports, a lot of the vessels now, for various reasons, are called slow boating. So their transit time from port to port is being slowed up because it burns less fuel and their efficiencies. And those are delays that are on the water. So not necessarily they're getting here as quick and piling up at the port. So some of these things are a bit of a skew where it looks good, but there are reasons why it is not as good as it should look. Here's the bottom line. Port of LA. You have the longshoremen that were in negotiations and they canceled negotiations. So do I think there's going to be a strike? No. But is it possible at the end of June when their contract expires? Yes. Their contract calls for no strike, I believe, while they have a contract. But if the contract expires, I guess it's working at free will. So there is always the possibility that if they have no contract and they're working, they could stop working. So that's something that the whole nation has eyes on because that could be a disastrous situation when the bulk of the goods that are coming into the Port of LA during the peak season month, which is the busiest month, the summer months, are for back to school as well as holiday goods could be decimating the season and you'll have a frenzy. Okay. So that's something that the administration, I'm sure, has tried to address behind the scenes, because that would be a terrible black mark on their policy that they have one more issue that now could be very, very detrimental. Now, with that, you have a tremendous amount of goods that are flipped to the East Coast and other ports because LA was congested. People don't want to have a revisit of what happened 6 months ago. They thought, let me spread out our containers throughout the country that are coming in. Well, now, we have the Port of New York that's starting to get congested. And most recently, I read in the Wall Street Journal that the Port Director of Newark is concerned that there's going to be so much congestion and the empty containers, once they're taken off the pier, are not efficiently being returned to the pier, that she was afraid of White House intervention. Okay. So she's very concerned about the port. And I am as well. I have many a client that have picked up their containers from the port only to find that they can't return them because the port's not accepting them and the terminals. So that now increases the problem of not having enough equipment, which is the chassis, which containers go on, the wheels, to pull more containers out of the port. So I see this as a brewing situation.
Sal, let me make sure I understand this. So what you're saying is on the East Coast, after they unload the products and goods off of these containers, or they take the container away with the goods, but now they cannot bring them back, so they're going to stack up in the ports. Is that what you're saying?
So basically, what I'm saying is there is a stack up at the ports of empty containers that are not going back. But here's exactly how it works: the terminal, when they unload a vessel, they stack the containers in the yard. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when a trucker pulls in to the yard to get a container, the crane basically takes the container and places it on a chassis. And the chassis has the wheels on it. That then leaves the terminal and goes to the ultimate destination of a warehouse, a distribution center. When the container is unloaded, now you have an empty container on the chassis. Now, logically thinking, you're going to return it back to the terminal because you have an empty container that you don't need anymore. The problem is that the terminal is not accepting the container.
Okay. And I get all this. So why are they not accepting it? They don't have the space for it. They don't have the manpower.
Yeah. A myriad of reasons. Space, you know, a lot of different reasons. So now you start to have a pileup of these importers who have hundreds of empty containers that they don't know what to do with.
Wow. So what, you're in the business, what do you think the solution will be? Or is there a solution? You're mentioning the White House might get involved. What would they do?
Well, I think that the we either have to have federal land available to park these empty containers, at the very least. I think they have to put pressure on the terminals and the carriers that have made over $200 billion last year. And you know what? Sending some empty recovery vessels and take all these empties out of there, okay? And that's what you got to do. But you know what? No one's doing it. Everyone has a vested interest to basically make money where they can. So unfortunately, in this situation, guess what? The terminals get paid for storage when you take that empty container out of the terminal. So they're getting paid hundreds of dollars a day. So really, what's their incentive to take it back also, right? I mean, it's the whole thing is a malaise. And the importer gets stuck with the bill as usual. And guess what? After the importer gets stuck with the bill, they pass it down to the consumer. Because when I tell you this demurrage and storage issue, I wouldn't be surprised if it hit the industry for over $1 billion already.
Wow. That's, I mean, I'm speechless. I don't even know what to say to that.
And mind you, you want to be more speechless. Huh. Do you realize that not one major carrier, as the number one country in the world, United States, bringing goods into the U.S. is American owned?
I believe that, unfortunately. Well, I heard the segment where you were talking about, listen, these Trans-Pacific ways, they're controlled by international characters, and those prices are set by them as well, correct?
Absolutely.
And beyond that, there's like a few carriers that control a massive amount of the traffic. And so the companies just want to deal with those guys because they can deal with less providers who have more capacity. I mean, it sounds like a stranglehold from all
sides. It is a stranglehold. So you have to put things in context. Up until 2 years ago, the steamship lines barely made money. 2016, I believe, the Hanjin line went out of business, okay, bankrupt, which was a Korean carrier. A lot of the other carriers formed alliances and they combined resources so that they could basically maintain their businesses. So when COVID came and the last 2 years and these billions of dollars being made, it was like a kid in the candy store. They had so much money now, they became independent. Not only are they ocean carriers, but now they're looking to buy cargo airlines. They're looking to buy logistics companies, transportation companies. And now they're dictating, the last time I checked, approximately the top 2% of importers from Asia, China, control 30% of the volume. So basically the steamship lines want to go after that 2% that control the bulk and not deal with all these small and mid-sized importers, which is just more hassle. And they want to streamline their operations and have multi-year contracts with these major importers and leave everyone else basically to have less capacity they had in the past and double their rates and kind of fend for themselves to a certain extent. So I have one importer who had a relationship with a steamship line for 20 years. The steamship line cut their capacity. And when he went to go to look for other carriers, okay, and he called at least the top 10 because he moves about 4,000 containers annually, he didn't even get a return phone call.
I'm speaking with Salvatore Style. He is the founder and president of Alba Wheels Up International, freight forwarder and customs broker. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to TNT. This is the program. My name is Michael Parker.
Free speech is in our DNA.
Experimental vaccines will never change that.
Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Yeah, even there. Never miss out on the news and views of the big issues of the day. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio.
Or download the TNT Radio app for free
from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Affordable housing. We can build that. Sustainable housing. We can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
My name is Latoy Adams. I served in the Army. Being with paralyzed veterans of America, they have showed me so much is possible.
I'm Sean Castle, served in the United States Army. I went from laying in a hospital bed dying to being a professional wheelchair basketball player. And it started with that one moment where there's life. I am unstoppable because Paralyzed Veterans of America is by my side.
We are unstoppable.
Learn more at pva.org.
This is today's news talk and the voice of freedom, TNT Radio.
This is TNT. My program is Deep Program. My name is Michael Parker. I'm speaking with Salvatore Style. He is the founder and president of Alba Wheels International. Sal, I want to make sure that I understand this, because you're saying just a few years ago, these shippers weren't making very much money. Now they're making a lot of, the carriers. So, but now they are. Explain what happened to increase the revenue like this.
Well, basically, let's just say pre-COVID, you had importers that were choosing one carrier over another that were fighting over $50 to $100 a container. Okay. And when COVID came, the carriers were even in more trouble because nothing was really moving. You had lockdowns all over the place. But then when you had what I call the great replenishment of America, there was a surge in demand because everyone was home. And the carriers said, gee, we took more vessels off because there was no demand. Now we're seeing this huge demand. They put staggering of vessels and they saw the huge margins they were making with less vessels, okay, being utilized. And they got smart. They saw, they wanted to make massive amounts of profits, given the fact that this was a substantial demand. People were paying $20,000+ a container. Just years ago was for the same container, maybe a couple of $1,000s. So there's a tremendous surge. Okay, people needed their goods, and that's how they made $200 billion this year. I think they're going to make $300 billion. The last I read. So, I mean, they got stuffed with cash. And what do you do when you have stuffed with cash now? You could ride out and you don't have to lower your rates as much because you have these capital reserves of billions and billions and billions of dollars. I just read the MSC owner, which is a public company, one of the largest steamship lines in the world. His wealth doubled, over the last 2 years from something like, I believe, $10 billion to $20 billion. So this is what's happening in the shipping industry. The carriers became flush with cash and they're utilizing this cash to buy up other logistics companies in the market. And eventually you're going to have it where it's going to be like cable or anything else. They're going to dictate you use us for these services, or we're not going to provide this or that to you. And we're going to control the capacity. You have to remember, I mean, the steamship lines is only about a dozen or so that control the whole world really effectively. So there's not many people that could compete with that. It's not like you're going to start up a a new steamship line, unless you're Vietnam, by the way. They got real smart. They were tired of being the casualty of this mess. And even they got the understanding that they're putting $2.5 billion to form their own national carrier. Imagine that. Third world country. Huh. Meanwhile, our country, we don't have really anything to do other than to beg and try to get as much space as we can from these foreign carriers. And that's what you're faced with.
Sal, this is ridiculous. It sounds like, for me, what you're describing, these carriers, now that they've gotten smart and they've made all this money and they can ride it out, I mean, what would be the incentive for them to reduce their prices? I don't see that there would be any, especially going into the summer months, which I learned from watching you and reading about you. This is the prime shipping time because we're going into back to school holidays. Is there any incentive for these carriers to reduce their prices back a little bit?
I don't think there's going to be an incentive during the summertime. Right now, though, the market rate is lower than usual for a lot of reasons. So I don't want to say that they shouldn't be cognizant of those smaller and mid-sized importers, which I think were isolated to a certain extent and do have a lot of volumes. Eventually, I think they're going to have to reach out to those importers in the years to come in the future a little bit more and welcome them back, because they really dismissed a lot of them, obviously, because they didn't need them. But at the end of the day, if they do not get these rates in line, all I could see is higher inflation, and these smaller and mid-sized importers are not going to be able to compete, and they'll go out of business. That's the end of the story.
Well, and that was what happened in a lot of things during COVID. I mean, the retailers, the small guy, the little guy goes out, and the big box retailer is able to consume that space. So it sounds like the same thing again.
One thing
I want to, yeah, it's terrible.
I was going to say that's a very good anomaly, just like everything else. Years ago, you had a small grocery store. Then what happens? You have BJ's, Costco, this place. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, small business is finished in America unless you have a niche, okay, or something really, really, really special. And guess what? You're not going to be making a tremendous amount of money. You're just going to be able to provide for your family as a decent paycheck and call it a day. So very, very, very demoralizing.
Yes, it is. I agree with you. And I think it's over as well. And COVID finished it off because it just allowed this phenomena that we're describing to happen. I want to return also, though, to these labor union discussions, because I guess here on the West Coast, we account for about 40% of imports into North America. And I think that's one of the things, regardless. Okay, so we've got these two groups here. I'm trying to find the acronyms for them. And you're saying that
Pacific Maritime Association and the ILWU, International Longshoremen's Warehouse Union.
Yeah. So they've got to have, at least one of these groups has got to have their negotiations finished by June 30th. And if they don't, then we might have a strike. I mean, that's yet another component in this thing that, what do you think is going to happen with that?
Okay, so this is what I think is going to happen. Number one, June 30th is when the contract expires. They were negotiating. They stopped the negotiations, okay? So I believe the play is going to be that they're going to go for the biggest money grab in the history, okay, of union commerce, because they want their share of the $200 or $300 billion that was made by the steamship lines terminals. I believe that they are going to maybe possibly surreptitiously threaten possibly a strike. I don't believe they're going to go on strike, because I think the administration cannot afford to have that happen. Because if it did, it'd be an utter disaster. Okay. So I think behind the scenes, they're doing everything they can to get the two sides to negotiate. But I don't believe this negotiation will be done probably to the fall, if that. Okay. So I think that it's going to be a cat and mouse game for the next couple of months. Let me tell you, it's the best time to be negotiation in the history of the United States if you're a longshoreman, because you're in the peak season. It just so happens your contract is expiring, okay, this year. And you have billions and billions of dollars that were made by the steamship lines. So they can't use it as an excuse that, oh, we didn't make money like they did in the years past. So I'm very interested to see how this plays out. The only thing I'd like to say is that the ports do need some type of automation that is on par with our foreign counterparts. And the union is very much against that because the union is about the union and the union family members and so forth. But to a certain extent, doesn't give credence to a lot of other outliers, which I think should be brought into the equation. But that's not for me to say. It's between the Pacific Maritime Association. It's between the union. There's hundreds of billions of dollars that were made in this industry. I'm sure they should be able to figure it out and compromise somewhere.
Well, and you're right. I mean, they hold all the cards at this point, because after this black eye of this baby formula thing and just all the other just complete nonsense that's happened in the last 14, 18, 16 months, you're right. I mean, the Biden administration can't take any more of this. And if I'm the union, I'm like, I know that. And yeah, you're right. They could threaten a strike and they could sit pretty and wait it out and get the cash. So I'm with you. If they were to go on strike and we weren't able to get this thing sorted out by fall, even that time seems like it's too late, given what I'm just learning very quickly about how you guys work.
You'll have your holiday and Christmas goods for Valentine's Day. How about that? So I guess you'll have to have Cupid the elf. Okay.
Wow. That is ridiculous. All right. Well, I'm trying to think. I don't even know where to go with this, because it's like, I mean, last year, so I'm here in LA, and the whole story was we got all these boats backed up off of LA and Long Beach. And everybody, once they kind of understood that, we were all pretty pissed off, frankly. We're like, how did this happen? And then we thought things were getting better, only to find out, you know, that it's not exactly getting as much better as we thought. Now we got the zero COVID policy in China, which is that contributes to the offloading and importing from China.
And I just want to interrupt you 1 second on that.
Please go for it.
There's a theory in the market that I've heard that China purposely, this is not my, I'm not saying this as my opinion. I'm saying this is what I've heard, that China purposely has shut down ports to manipulate market rates with the other foreign carriers, okay, because they have the Costco line, which is one of the largest in the world, okay, so that they also have an impact and direct where they want rates going and which way. So this is, I think, from what I heard, a theory that's just far more above just a COVID lockdown, and there were other motives behind it.
No, that makes sense, and it's actually a pretty wily thing to do, so that wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. That's why I call it the Port of Black Swans.
Yeah. I mean, well, weigh in on this baby formula thing a little bit, because I know this is a different situation, and this has to do with products that were already created within the U.S. and then a factory's getting shut down because supposedly we've got bacteria and a couple of things. But speak to that for just a moment, because it is, you know, all over the news. People are freaked out. We're actually having to. Okay, the United States in the 21st century is flying in 70, 80,000 pounds of baby formula from Germany.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
I think it's a big crisis issue. There's only a few of the, like the steamship lines, there's only a few major providers of the baby formula that make it. I'm not sure how much of impact that the logistics from international overseas has on formula. I assume that there are some pharmaceutical ingredients that may come, packaging and so forth, things of that nature, raw materials. But again, it's a mess, kind of like the semiconductors mess out of Taiwan. You can't even buy a car right now with heated seats. You get your car, and when the chip's available 6 months from now, maybe you get the heated seats, or they're limiting the car's options and shutting off the circuits until they have more chips. So the whole thing is out of control. Mind you, with Taiwan, God forbid China should make a move, you have just really crippled U.S. economy, because we are so dependent on that market for electronics, semiconductors. I wouldn't even know what to say at that point.
Man, I didn't even go that far in my head, and you are exactly right. So I guess the heads of Intel and NVIDIA had made some comments in the last couple of days, because all those kind of folks are over in Davos. And they're basically just saying, look, man, something has to give here, because, you know, what you're describing. It's like, we cannot do this way much more. So we're going to have to, I would think, we're going to have to start creating some of those products here in the U.S. And I mean, I don't know how long that takes to get these kinds of
years.
Yeah.
But you want to, you know, but you don't want to know something I read about, you know, like everyone else, $1 trillion infrastructure bill, this, that. Mm-hmm. I see things that are spent on so many areas that really, in my opinion, are not material. Okay.
Right.
Some of them are good, but a lot of them are like, what are you doing?
Right.
You want to have infrastructure bill? Make the American business infrastructure bill. Put $500 billion into the U.S. businesses, the mid-market companies, to get grants and tax incentives, write-offs. You want to make this a production company? You want to put materials in here? And you know what? Spend an American business infrastructure bill for $500 billion and get the country less dependent on everywhere else. You want to talk about trade war? China just has to push the button on any port, any factory, and we are finished, okay? So this is ridiculous. I'm in international trade. It's to my benefit to have trade from Asia and every country in the world. But as an American citizen, I can tell you this. It's a disgrace how dependent we are and pushed around by so many foreign-owned industries that there has to be a corrective measure. Otherwise, we will no longer be a first-rate country. We'll go down a tier. I'm telling you that now. That's my opinion.
Amen, brother. I agree with you. Everything you just said. Listen, I grew up in the oil business, and it's the same thing. It's like, listen, this is good for my family, the prices, but it ain't good for America. And as an American, I don't want to be making money off the misfortune of others. And it doesn't have to be like this. This is all bad policy that allows price gouging on various fronts. And no, we've got to get back to manufacturing within the U.S. It's a win-win on every level. If we manufacture in the U.S., we're providing jobs, we're providing national security, we're increasing the economy and the GDP. I mean, it's common sense.
But there's a flip side to that coin. And the flip side is you can't have unions that all about the unions and don't want to be flexible, because that's what drove a lot of industry out of the U.S. in the first place.
Yeah. All right, folks, we got to take a break. I'm speaking with Salvatore Stile, and we're talking about this just ridiculous situation that the United States is finding itself in at the moment. We're going to take a quick break. This is TNT. This show is deprogrammed. We'll be right back.
Be afraid. Be very afraid. World Economic Forum President Klaus Schwab has said the future is built by the elites at Davos.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
Let's also be clear. The future is not just happening. The future is built by us, by a powerful community as you here in this room. We have the means to improve the states of the world.
Yes, that's right. Klaus Schwab announcing to the world that he has the means to improve the world and that they are in charge of your life. Did anyone vote for Klaus Schwab? This is all part of the Great Reset. You will owe nothing and you will be happy. All your food will be delivered by drones. You will not eat meat. You'll have no privacy, but you'll like it. Welcome to Serfdom 2022. For the Morano Minute, this is Mark Morano on TNT Radio.
In many countries around the world, medical care is scarce. Countless millions have no access to safe surgery. Mercy Ships is there to help. Mercy Ships provides free surgeries for the thousands of those who are waiting for surgery at each port.
Mercy Ships is bringing services to countries that would otherwise never be able to access those services.
Find out how you can help by visiting our website at mercyships.org. That's mercyships.org.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Who is Klaus Schwab, and what is the World Economic Forum which he leads? Just quoting Klaus Schwab is alarming enough. If he and his billionaire friends achieve their Great Reset, tyranny would be the new world order. Born in Ravensburg, Germany in 1938, Klaus Schwab is a child of Adolf Hitler's Third Reich a political state regime built on fear and violence, on brainwashing and control, on propaganda and lies. While the Nazis desired a new order for Germany that would last 1,000 years, Klaus Schwab's vision extends globally and would potentially be unstoppable were nations to relinquish all sovereignty and adopt the neurotechnologies and biotechnologies which forces us, in the words of Klaus Schwab, to question what it means to be human.
For the news and views you can't hear anywhere else, it's TNT Radio.
This is the program. My name is Michael Parker. I'm speaking with Salvatore Stile, and he is the founder and president of Alba Wheels Up International. This is our final segment with Sal. Sal, I kind of want to give you the floor and get us up to speed on everything else that we need to know about this situation, or just things that are on your radar that my audience needs to know about. Now, and we do have a global audience, so our network is based out of Australia, but so whether it be European, Australian, U.S., I'm all ears.
So I think, especially with the war, the lockdowns, I think very tumultuous times. I think those companies that have the resources will get through it. A lot of people won't get through it, which is just going to give more market share to the larger corporations. I think the small businessmen and the medium-sized mid-market corporations, I think they have to get more savvy and use the tools that are available to these multi-billion dollar corporations and learn more about them. Our company basically services mid-market companies anywhere from $10 to $2 billion. And our success has always been to take the ideas and allowable rules and regulations in trade and show our importers how to implement them and educate them. Hence, that's why I was on the front page of the Wall Street Journal in regards to what was called the de minimis program, where, how ironically, the program was set up that if you know who the consumer is at the time of export for a commodity, it is tariff and duty free for eligible items. Therefore, basically, you could save, anywhere 30-40% depending on the product. Well, a lot of American companies, unless they're the larger ones, don't know how to take advantage of the law, but the Asian countries do know how to do it better than us. So that what's happening is you have billions upon $67 billion of goods coming in tax-free that Asian China companies know how to work the law better than U.S. companies and are sending factory to consumer direct, okay, and cutting out the American importer. And this is what American importers have to do to understand what foreign competition and how other countries are using our own laws better and effectively against these American companies. And that's what I do, is I show smaller and mid-market companies how to compete, because right off the bat, if you're not using certain programs, you're 30% higher without doing anything than your competition overseas. And these are the things with a global economy, people really have to be cognizant of. It's a new trade transformation. Things are not going to be the same as they were in the past. Rates will never get to a level that it was pre-pandemic. And it's only going to be harder and harder and harder. For the consumers, well, they're in trouble. Their pockets say it. All the U.S. stimulus checks, well, that didn't do them any good, because that all went to these disastrous rates and shortages. Yeah. And we have a stagflation. You know, it's the supply that's causing a lot of this problem. It's not so much, you know, demand now, it's the supply. You can't even get a luxury car for a year. I passed by in Long Island, New York, the car dealership on the way home that's on the Long Island Expressway. And would you believe there is not one luxury car you could buy? You have to wait a year to get it. That's because the chip shortage is this. So the whole economy is in a malaise. I don't know when it's going to get better, but it can't stay the way it is, because it's just too much pain. And when you have a lot of pain, then you have a lot of strife. And then you have a lot of people, in my opinion, especially during the summer, that when they're so frustrated, you know, that's when you have sometimes cities just have rioting and other things. The people are just fed up. They don't have the money. They don't have this. And they have to release their, I guess, energy and anger. I don't want to, you know, go too far off the wall, but I've seen these things happen. In New York, I've seen them happen in other cities, and, you know, people have no outlet. It's not like they're going to be able to go to a movie And spend $20 and then have a $5 slice of pizza. So all the simple things of life are being taken away. And when people don't have things to ease their stresses during their life, I think that's a big problem, okay? I think it's a big problem that you go to New York City and you have to spend $5 on a slice of pizza. And you know what? That's not even with extra cheese, okay?
Everything you just said, I agree with 100%. Now, one thing you did say that's really interesting to me and makes me think, you know, because people complain about companies not paying taxes, which is hyperbole. They're paying less taxes, okay? But they are taking advantage of things that you sometimes could also be taking advantage of if you understood the tax code better. So that's what you help your clients do. And you're pointing out that these other countries, they are on top of this 100%. They see the places where they can take advantage and they do it. They don't let it slide. So
I'm not going to mention the name, but there is one online retail marketplace that sells apparel to the US based in China. Okay. That was just valued at $100 billion. Okay. Mm-hmm. I assure you, the majority of their sales is through the Section 321 program, where they're already saving all the duties and sending direct to factory to consumer. And that is why you see these type of things going on. And that is why, you know, American consumers see why it's cheaper to buy overseas and so forth. It's not only the labor, it's because they're using tools to effectively eliminate their duties. And if the American companies don't wake up, they're going to find themselves basically out of business. That's the end of the story.
I mean, financial Darwinism, you would think if you were in some of these businesses, I mean, I don't know if they don't have time. I don't know if they're just ignorant. I mean, I don't know if they're entirely depending on people like you to tell them. But I mean, if you're going to stay in business, you're going to have to take advantage of these things or you're going to be gone, because the times have changed and your competitors are way bigger than you and they have way more resources than you. So I don't know.
Well, I mean, you're going to have to get sharp. And that goes to myself too. I self-prophesize because, you know, we're a relatively large mid-sized market company. You know, our total sales were anywhere $400 to $500 million, far cry from $20 billion and $100 billion competitors in the transportation space. But you know what? Our niche is that we understand how to navigate and implement a lot of things quicker than our competitors. And that allows me to stay in business. Otherwise, quite frankly, I'd be demised too.
I get it. Let me ask you in our final last minutes. So do you pretty much serve all kinds of goods? I mean, is there one area you specialize in, or could it just be anything? And does any of that involve oil?
We do not bring in oil. Okay. We used to years ago bring massive tankers, because oil, you're basically clearing a whole entire ship. Our forte basically is, foods, wearing apparel, accessories, footwear, electronics, basically a lot of retail, goods, a lot of raw materials, things of that nature, things that require, Food and Drug Administration, EPA clearance. Things that are a little bit more technical that need expertise is really where we exceed, because a lot of companies don't have that type of talent to understanding all the rules, regulations, and nuances of so many laws. So we're like a specialist in so many areas. And that's why, you know, our clients work with us, because they have peace of mind at the end of the day that they're going to get their goods in efficiently, timely, and compliantly. Compliance, very important.
What about pharmaceuticals? Because a lot of, I mean, what is it? 90% of our pharmaceuticals come from China now?
Yes, we bring in a lot of supplements for vitamins and for medications. So yes, tremendous amount of pharmaceuticals. And also a lot of pharmaceuticals come out of India.
That's right.
As well. Yep. So we really dabble in everything. But our main focus is to really help the mid-market small importer compete with the big guys and show them all the tools, regulations, and give them the know-how to give them their best shot at doing that. That's really what we like doing. We like educating, and we like being true partners. We know our space. Our space is the mid-market. We like the mid-market. I do not want to be working with $20 billion conglomerates that will be with you 1 year and then leave the next. We're not into that. So we're very happy what we service. And quite frankly, we kind of pick and choose our customers as well, because there are so many customers that need this type of advice and guidance that we could be very selective and deal with people that really want to work with us. Okay. So that's the best part of this business.
Well, I've learned a lot just from watching your segments, reading about you, a lot of stuff that I didn't know about. That's one of the good parts of this job. It's like every day I interview like three different people and I have to do like cramming for a test every day, but I've learned so much. So ultimately, in our remaining minutes, are you optimistic? Are you pessimistic? I mean, because we've mentioned the unions, we mentioned the backup of the gear on the East Coast, the Black Swan events in China. I mean, are we going to sort this out, or is it just going to continue being a cluster?
In my opinion, it's going to be a hardship to the end of the year in so many areas. Yeah. Okay, I think January 23 will be a bit better. I just hope that the consumers have the money to even buy the goods at that point, because when I see the decimation of pricing and the cost and the I think also there's going to be layoffs. Okay, we had a big employment surge. Well, you know what? I can't see a lot of these companies who have spent so much money on freight, on tariffs. A lot of them didn't even make money last year or lost money, and they'll probably do the same this year. How many years can you do that? So they're going to have to cut costs. And I basically see this employment boom subsiding. I do.
Yeah. Now that all sounds reasonable to me. And I think, I mean, there's a lot of people that were going to count on the back to school and the holiday sales, as they do every year, to make a bulk of their revenue for the year. So if there is a continued slowdown,
I just read Under Armour, one of the biggest apparel companies in the world, just canceled a tremendous amount of their goods because of supply chain issues. They advised, the stakeholders that their quarterly earning is going to be dismal. I see that happening with a lot of retailers. They're getting nervous. They're canceling goods on importers that already put things into production. So I see a lot of inventory with mid-market companies going to be stuck with. And I think it's going to suffocate them. So when I read the Under Armour article, it just reinforced that people are nervous. They are not going to take goods in, because you know what? How could you take summer goods in and sell them in the fall? Okay. It doesn't work. I mean, things are seasonal. The seasons are decimated for so many categories that you can't even get the goods in for the season you needed it. So this is going to be a big problem of getting goods for the right season and timing that now are basically worthless.
Well, that was going to be my question, is why they were canceling the orders. But yeah, they don't want to get a summer good and have it show up in February or something or November. No, that makes
absolutely
sense.
That's the problem.
All right. Okay. We just got a couple of minutes. Tell everybody where they can find out all about you and your website and maybe anything else that we need to know as far as contacting you and where we can find you. Social media, you got.
I guess the two main places you could find me are LinkedIn, under Alba Wheels Up International or Salvatore Style with an I. The company website is albawheelsup.com. And basically, reach out if you need assistance, no obligation. One of the things that's unique about our company is we give advice and we give our opinion without charging. Unless it gets obviously, ridiculous that you want us like to be with you for 5 hours. But, we're very, very informative. Many of our clients contacted me years ago. I gave them friendly advice. And then years later, they said, you know what, Sal, thanks for helping me out. You didn't expect any business. You just lended a helping hand and we'd like to now work with you. So we're very flexible and welcoming. We really just want to make the American companies as strong as possible, with as much knowledge as possible, and be able to compete against all the foreign counterparts, which in many instances are annihilating us. And I don't like watching it.
I don't like watching it either. And Sal, you're a super likable guy. I want to have you back again so we can talk more about this. And just from the segments that I've been watching of you, I've really enjoyed it. I think you explain all this very well to people who aren't in the business.
Well, thank you. And, one of the things that I try to do is be very transparent. Thank God this industry and my career has treated me very well. I don't have to placate to anyone. I don't have to say anything to make an extra dollar in my pocket. And thankfully to God and a lot of people around me, I do what I do as a matter of choice. Okay. And that's what I was fortunate to have is choice. If I want to work or retire, I could do that. Whatever I want to do, I have choice. But really what gets me up in the day is educating, meeting new people, and helping people. That's what thrives and allows me to come to work. I don't have any hobbies other than my business, unfortunately, but that's just the way it is. So everyone gets the benefit that works from us, from my time and my dedication.
All right. Well, Sal, thank you so much. And we will be having you back. I thoroughly enjoyed our conversation. I hope things get better. I think you pretty much nailed it. It's going to be dicey for the next several months. You are listening to Deprogram. My name is Michael Parker, and we'll be back in just a moment with Matthew Rodriguez and CeCe Woods to discuss the tragedy in Uvalde and guns and the rest of it. We'll be right back.